In this episode of TWIP, it's all about why you shouldn't be starting a photography business.
This is TWIP.
Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I am your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Tonight on the show, we are live streaming. I'm sitting here with my good friend, Mr. Julio Shorio. Julio and I are going to dive into some of the ins and outs behind running your own business, your own photography business, and why that may not be a good idea for some people. It might be a good idea for other people, but we're going to get to the bottom of that. Before we dive into that, I want to thank our sponsor for this episode of This Week in Photo, and that's our good friends over at Creative Live. You can find them at creativelive.com. Tons and tons of courses that they have over there for you to download. I believe Creative Live started with photography as sort of the main thrust of what the business is about, with a friend of the show, Chase Jarvis. And then they went on to add other verticals and different types of photography, or I'm sorry, different types of businesses and content that you can consume over there. But creativelive.com, you know their model. If you're not familiar with Creative Live, the model is they broadcast their shows live and you can watch the live broadcast for free. So if you have the time, you can sit down and consume what they have to offer for nothing. But then if you'd like to watch it on demand and have access to it in your Creative Live account, then you pay for the course and you can have it. So you get it. Basically, it's the best of both worlds. We love those guys. They're doing some fantastic work. They're juggernauts in the industry now. I remember when Creative Live first got started, it was tiny, as many just getting started businesses are. But then they went on, and now they're absolutely crushing it over at Creative Live. The content is way beyond most things that you see on some other competing online services, education services. But, it's just a different way of learning, and they do a really good job at that. So check them out at creativelive.com, friends of This Week in Photo. All right, let's start the show. Julio Shorio, like I mentioned, is here to talk to us about some of the ins and outs and his learnings, good and bad, when it comes to running your own photography business. Julio, how you doing, man? I haven't talked to you in 2 weeks. What's going on?
Dude, I just went out and bought my first Ferrari. No, I'm just kidding.
You just went and bought a Ferrari?
And I'm going to show you how to do it. You just got to buy my 5-step program.
There you go.
Hello.
Exactly.
What's up? Well, no, wait.
I'm going to show you how to be a millionaire. Just send me a dollar. A million people, send me a dollar. Then I'm going to tell you how I made $1 million.
Right. Just buy my book. And at the end, it says, make a book and sell it.
Exactly.
Because it's that easy.
Yeah.
Go boosh.
Yeah. It's the art of the steal. Money. Yeah. The art of the steal. Let's do it. So, man, let's get a little background on you before you know, like I said, you were on the show a couple weeks ago. And you and I were chatting. Sue Bryce was the special insert guest back then. People love Sue Bryce. So it's a phenomenon. But, you know, for the folks that may not be familiar who Julio G. Shorio is, give us your quick elevator pitch before we dive into the content.
Sure. I've been a photographer since 93, full-time since 2005. The only photographer ever to have been sponsored by Olympus and Panasonic. To my knowledge, shot the biggest issues for Village Voice Media, left kind of all of that behind to put my focus on, I'm all about where the future of photography is going, and put my focus on the future of photography, which is vision and creativity. Oh, I created a lot of techniques and technologies for, creating cinemagraphs some time ago.
Yeah, did. That's where you and I met. I don't know. I think we knew each other before then, but you and I were having conversations about, you know, cinemagraphs and motion type stuff being sort of the next big thing. Mm-hmm. Where is that gone? Is that you still feel that way, or was that, you know, a lot of people back then were saying that it's a fad, and is that bearing itself out, or is it just another way for people to, you know, share their vision?
It's a fad, like HDR is a fad. So if that is what inspires you to create, then, you know, just by all means, still do it. It's something that at the time was fresh and new, and so everybody was wanting to figure out how to do it, and they were very effective. In a sea of still images, having something to move a little bit was very effective. I think people are desensitized to it now, but it's like anything else. It's like every so often people are really into skateboarding, or, you know, and then it kind of dies down and it comes back. It'll be, you know, it'll come back again at some point.
Well, Eddie Lagos, what's up, Eddie, in the chat is asking, what's a cinemagraph?
So a cinemagraph is a photograph that's based from video. And when the video is just 30 frames a second or 24 frame, whatever, it's just a series of frames. Part of that image that you see is a static image. So the photograph, that's the master frame, if you were to imagine layers. And below that master frame is the video that loops. Okay, and so then imagine that photo has a piece that's punched out, and then it just kind of looks like the photo has parts of it that's a living,
yeah,
like a living photo, and part of it that's not. But there's tons of ways that those types of photos have not been exploited yet. Stuff that I've, techniques I developed and I show it to people, and they're just like, we don't know how to use this yet. So, but you know, I was doing cinemagraphs in 2009, and people were like, what are we going to do with this? I'm like, do you see that thing in your hand? Like, yeah, that's okay. That iPhone that's in version 2 or 3 or whatever is going to be super huge, and everyone will have one day. And if that's what they have in their hand and it can display a still image, but also a moving image, you may have an advantage with the moving image. I mean, call me crazy. And yeah, it took forever for that to catch on. So
yeah, I mean, it's the screens, right? It's the idea that there are screens everywhere. Even when we first started talking, the idea was, okay, the sort of soapbox that you were standing on was there. There's screens everywhere. They're in your pocket. They're in your living room. They're in the airport. They're in Times Square. Why not create content that is more visual than just a static image, right?
Exactly. So that's where they came from. That was the thing. So after the economy kind of came back a little bit, and people were starting to realize, hey, what I have on my phone is more than a print. Not that prints are, I love prints, but, you know, it's more than a print. And then screens started popping up everywhere. Screens over urinals and in hotels and stuff. I'm like, so if that's a screen and it can do a static image, cool. But what if it moved? Then it's video. But what if it moved just a little bit? Wouldn't that kind of, since we're so used to seeing a static image and then we're so used to seeing a video image, if something was a little bit in between? And people are like, wow, that's really creepy. And they just didn't know how to react. But eventually it caught on because it sold goods and services, because that's mm-hmm. what commercial photography is to sell goods and services. And it worked. Yeah. And for a while there, I was making a lot of money over from those images. And yeah, then one day it just went, it just literally shut off, which is often the case when you're dealing with something that's
faddish.
Kind of faddish, yeah. I would say it's faddish, but it'll come back. It'll just come back in a different form. In fact, we're seeing that already with the plotographs. And there's a new app for iPhone that just came out today that you can do it on your phone.
Yeah, there's a couple on the phone. In fact, I was at Disney World, Disneyland, I don't know, I get it mixed up, here in California, and I was playing around with one, and it was just an iOS app that allows you to do those sorts of things. But anyway, yeah, I digress. Pixel Loop, yes, that's the one. Yeah, I got a shot of me and Groot up there. For some reason, he only said 3 words every time I talked to him. But anyway, so he, you know, the point that you make about you making money with cinemagraphs and then it's sort of drying up is a good segue into the topic for this episode. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the idea of, is it viable? Are photography businesses viable these days? And, you know, you have a good perspective on it. Our special guest interview, Jeff Cable, also had some insight into, you know, the whole managing your life work balance side of the equation. But I wanted to have you on because you are one of the few people that I know that are a really, really straight shooter, right? So you're going to tell us like it is. You're going to tell us your experiences, not that your experiences are going to mirror everyone else's, but you're going to tell us your experiences, ups and downs about making money with your camera. So let me start it off. I'll prime the pump and light the pilot light with this.
Hey, all right, dude.
With this part. So is it possible to, and I'm going to put a fine point on this because you know, just saying, hey, is it possible to make money with your camera? Yeah, of course. You could go do that right now. Is it possible to thrive making money with your camera. There's surviving and there's thriving. You know, surviving is we're eating and maybe ramen noodles and, you know, whatever, canned goods or whatever. Thriving is there's more money in the bank at the end of the month than your bills, and you're able to buy some toys and all that stuff. Is it which one is it, Z? Is it possible to survive or thrive?
Maybe.
No, you're on the hot seat. You're the straight shooter, man. Come on.
It is, but it's dependent on a lot of factors, and that's where things become difficult. Many factors. And now people will say, "Oh, the market's dying." And they've been saying that. You should have seen the looks on people's faces around 2006 when digital really started to take off. Mm-hmm. People were like, "I'm going to go out of business," and it's like, "No, dude, just buy a digital camera and continue on. You're good." You know. But things changed over time, and it's like riding a bull. You have to hold on, and sometimes you get knocked off, and then you see where it's going, and you try to get back on that thing, and not get stuck with a horn. It is possible. It's difficult to sustain a steady income. That's where it's difficult, because you get paid by each job you do. So if you're relying strictly on photography, you could make a lot of money month, and then you can go for months, maybe even years, and not make anything, or very little, you know. And that's where it gets difficult. And then you have to decide, you know, how much fight you got in you if you want to make your living with photography. And that's, you know, that's where it gets difficult. But then, I mean, God, there's so many factors. Like, so let me rewind briefly. When I first started full time, I love corporate America. I'm so tired of working for corporate. To be poor, and I was for 2 years. I was on food stamps for 2 years, and I got into food photography partly so I can eat the food and
feed your food addiction.
Yeah, and I made a ton of calls, emails, and you know, and I'm like, I'm just not going to give up. And eventually, people started paying attention, and they saw the work was unique and different, and I started to get a lot of work. And then once the economy died, things stopped, and that's kind of when I was starting to develop the Cinemagraphs at that time. And then things came back, and I jumped on there and that, and I got into blogging early on and social media and whatnot. That helped me. And now things are shifting away from a lot of blogging and social media as far as like in the corporate social networks, I'll say. You know, and I've shifted again. You know, if you want to have a consistent living with photography, first of all, you need to know who you are as a photographer. And that's the hardest thing for most people. Partly because they're getting a lot of their information on YouTube. When you're getting information on YouTube or other places that were, you know, I don't want to mention names, but, you know, just pull one up. You have to ask yourself, who am I getting my information from? Are they themselves making a living with photography? Are they really doing it, or is it just a bunch of BS? Look at their body of work. Are you inspired by that? Is it good work? Because a lot of it isn't good. So is it good? Oh, it is good. Okay, who are they working with? How often are they working? How often are they updating their website? That is a indicator right there if someone is making fresh work, and not how many followers they have on Instagram. Because some of the world's best photographers, like Nadav Kander, doesn't have a lot of followers on Instagram. Yeah. Sandra doesn't have a lot of followers on Instagram, but some dork doing God knows what has a gazillion followers on Instagram. So if you are, to sum it up, I guess to put it simply, if you want a business that happens to sell photography and you're okay shooting whatever you need to shoot to make it work in your market, whatever market that is, you can have a sustainable income, but it has to be, you have to detach yourself from the love of the art, because that's just a business. If you are an artist first, you're going to have a lot of bumps on the road.
That's the scary part right there. That's
the truth though, dude. I'm an artist first. And you know, it's like I've had months where the money was ridiculous. And I was like, you know, if you get a few more months like this, there will be that Ferrari. And then there's like other months where I'm just like, dude, and it's been a few years, and it's been really difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, you hit on a couple of nerves there. One of them is the consistent, sustained income. right? And I think that's one of the myths that we should try and dispel with this, that hey, if you, the money's just going to flow in, you know, when you become a photographer. For some people it may, you know, everyone's experience is different, but setting expectations accordingly, it's a sine wave, right? I mean, it is a, you're going like this, you know, hey, wow, look at this. I'm buying a Tesla, you know, everybody's, yeah. And then down here, it's like, they're going to come repossess my car. I hope I get that check that client promised me. And then up here again, you're like, hey, I'm moving to New York City, Manhattan, you know? So in your opinion, how do you stabilize that? So obviously it's always going to be a sine wave, but how do you get it to be flatter, you know, so that you're not, you know, grasping for straws and changing your diet based on your income? Any solutions for that?
So totally. So if you love photography, if you're coming at this from the right brain to the left, that means you're an artist. And you're wanting to make art that matters to you, that you feel, just, you know, you have conviction when you're creating it. Maybe you're helping a community, whatever it is. You want to have a positive impact. Then you need to have other sources of income to sustain you, because you're going to get emotionally drained. You're going to get emotionally drained. And when you're trying to market, when people don't respond to you, or people, and I got a story to tell you later on, but when people do crummy things to you, when they know that you're trying to make a living with your art, it's emotionally taxing. You know, I meditate twice a day. I feel like I eat fairly well. I've been going to a therapist for a few months, dude, straight up. You know, I'm not going to lie to anybody. People need to know how difficult it can be, but as long, in my view, as long as I am making the light at the end of the tunnel brighter, and I'm making work that I feel good about at night, and making work that at this point in my life, I want to have a positive impact on a community. I'm not trying to sell a hamburger. Mm-hmm. So I'm going in that direction. So I feel good about it. I can sleep well at night, but I have to do other things to make the income grow, not even grow, but just be more sustainable, right? I have a son now, and it's like, you know, and a lot of the majority of the financial burden has been on my wife's shoulders for some time. It kind of flip-flopped when Roman was born. I was traveling a lot, and then I stopped traveling so I can stay home more, and her career started to grow, and now she's on her road a lot. So you have to be ready for a lot of like role reversals, and there's all these things that'll come with it. Especially when you are trying to make really good work, because that is a spiritual practice as much as anything. I've had many spiritual experiences this year alone doing the work that I'm doing, and to the point where afterwards I'm just like, wow, I feel like, I mean, you feel it. It's like, you know, you want to have an, it's like you're having an emotional experience at the same time.
Yeah,
that's not the kind of effect you get when you're creating for a business. If you're creating for a business, maybe you have other photographers work for you and you're out just shooting weddings, and every wedding is more or less the same, and they're creative, but you're not necessarily making art. And I know it's going to piss off a lot of people, but it's true. Like if you know that, hey, we're doing this year, I'm going to shoot 50 bouquet shots and whatever, it's creative, but it's calling it art is stretching it, event photography. If you're photographing
that's a good point on the event photography side. So do these things have to be mutually exclusive, in that you could be in service of your art, you know, and telling stories, and you have that burning flame in the back of your head that you have to get out, and you have to tell. We've all had that where there's this thing that keeps you up at night, and you gotta get it out, you know, and tell the world. And that's your particular flavor of art. But on the other side, there's reality, right? So not that art isn't reality, but the reality of mortgage payments and car payments and food and braces and, you know, all that stuff that your art is not necessarily going to sustain. So in that world, G, does it make sense? And I'm just hypothesizing here. In that world, does it make sense for the photographer to say, you know what, until I can do what I want to do, which is this art that's burning in my head, I'm going to do what I have to do, which is, you know, not to crap on event photographers or anyone like that, but I'm going to do event photography. I'm going to do, You know, I want to stay in the world of photography so I can exercise my shutter finger. So I'm going to do, you know, glamour shots at the mall. I'm going to, you know, whatever it takes. I'm going to keep shooting and make money in any genre by any means necessary until I can do the stuff that I want to do. Is that viable, or should the photographers just suck it up and starve and borrow and do all that stuff and only do the kind of art that they want to be doing? What do you think?
It's different for everybody, and there's nothing wrong with a few weeks ago. There's nothing wrong with having a gig job where you're doing grocery delivery or Uber. There's nothing wrong with any of that, as long as you feel good about it and you're not hurting other people. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. So if that's what works for you, then totally, totally do it. Where it can get a little sticky is when your art starts to cross over into that and you were not maybe prepared. People may say, oh, I love the project you did with, you know, the homeless shelter or whatever, and it's really inspired. Can you come shoot our bar mitzvah? And you're like, yeah, but you're not, and I can't give you that. Mm-hmm. It's different. You know what I mean? And that just comes into the conversation, and because then also a lot of often you get, you know, when you have a focused vision, like if you go on my website, you're going to see a very focused vision and a unique vision. But you still get calls for work that doesn't fit into that. And that's okay. And then you can decide, hey, is this person cool to work with? Is the money okay? Am I going to feel good about it? Then you say, yeah, let's do something. If they start saying, we want your art for our university and we only have $400, and by the way, we need to own the copyright, you'll be like, I don't think that's really going to work for me. Mm-hmm. I can do other photography for you, but I'm not making original art in that realm, you know. So yeah. It's different for everybody, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what do you think that the old adage, those who can't do, teach, and which has led to the sort of dearth of workshops that we have available to us, photography workshops and those sorts of things. Is that filled with people that can't necessarily do, so they're teaching, or they're really good at photography, but you can't make a living doing just the photography. You have to add, like you said, this other income stream to the flow, which is workshops, so that you can continue doing the other thing. Where do you fall on that, the whole workshop scene?
Yeah, you know, first time I heard that, I was like, whoever came up with that saying was angry. was angry. I mean, but there is some truth to that. So, I mean, if I really enjoy teaching and I enjoy sharing my knowledge, that's why I come on your show, and I have no filters. I'm like, you want to know the truth? This is the truth, how I see it. Whether people want to hear it or not, because someone's got to be that guy, and I'm happy to be that guy.
Yeah, yeah. You're our token that guy.
Yeah, that's cool, man. People know that I'm a straight shooter 100%.
That's right.
And that's the only way I'm going to be. But I enjoy teaching, and I know a lot of people enjoy teaching and are good at it. And I don't think of them any less than I would if they were shooting full-time, like all the time. And quite frankly, like when I have moments where like I'm doing nothing but shooting, I'm like, dude, I need a freaking break because it's taxing. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I'm happy to go teach and maybe even skip. Even in the past, I've skipped on some assignments because I'm just like, I'd rather go do this workshop in Seattle or whatever and connect with people on a different level and inspire them to look at the world in a different way for a change. Because they're, you know, a lot of people hate their jobs. So if I can help them out, cool. You know, and then there are people. And I think, I guess in a way I'm a good teacher in that regard because I'm still active in creating my craft. I think where teachers fall into a trap is where they get comfortable doing nothing but teaching. And then you're like, well, what have you created? And you're like, oh, that I don't really like the way that looks. That looks like you made it 10 years ago with a super high pass filter and, you know, and they're stuck in that rut. Mm-hmm. Not to say that their knowledge is invalid, but maybe they need to take a break and go out and get into that uncomfortable zone and create something and break some ground and then come back and share that knowledge.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to, you know, I did an interview today with, actually I did two interviews today. One with Rick Salmon and who's the other one? Anyway, Rick Salmon was talking about just that idea, you know, getting creative, getting out of your rut, you know, finding inspiration and that sort of thing. He gave some really good tips on how to do that. Here's a curveball at you, Julio. So the you know, in the beginning, you sort of mentioned the sort of mediocre photographer that has a gazillion views or likes or hits or whatever, and the great or the better photographer, let's say, is, you know, got a IV drip of traffic to their site, etc. You know, where does skill and honing your skill as a photographer versus honing your skill as a marketer come in, right? Because it's a balance there. Because if you are you spend all your money, like if someone gives you 10 marbles and that's your currency, and you spend all 10 marbles on becoming a great photographer, you're going to be an excellent photographer, but you run the risk of no one ever seeing your stuff unless, you know, the universe intervenes and, you know, something happens. But conversely, if you take all those marbles, you're a mediocre photographer, you take all those marbles, throw them on the marketing side, now you get a gazillion views and everyone knows your name, but your work is sort of meh, you know? What's the happy medium in there? What's the solution? How many of those 10 marbles, how many should I allocate to marketing, and which one should be heavier than the other?
I think in terms of time, you should be putting about 60 to 70% of your time into your marketing.
Wow.
To be effective, but not your dollars. In 2007, I was in a bunch of source books. I think I spent like around $25,000 that year just in those. And I got two emails for people that wanted to assist for me. That's it. Versus if I used that time, that money, which is time, right, to make a bunch of phone calls and get out there and meet people in person, probably would have had a higher yield, higher return on my time and money investment than spending that. But that's how you have to be. If you want to be successful financially, anything, you have to spend your majority of your time and effort in marketing. Mm-hmm. And people don't like that because it's scary. And some people say it's sleazy and it taints the art. And maybe it does a little bit, but you have to get the word out. And I'm not talking about social media. That doesn't work for like 95% of photographers, maybe more. Ask Zuckerberg. He won't tell you, but
yeah. It won't work for free. I mean, social media is very effective if you have a budget,
right? And it's very effective if you know your market. So if you are a commercial photographer, if you're working and trying to get jobs making ads, marketing to consumers on a consumer platform, which is social media, is not going to work for you. All that's going to do is get consumers interested in you. So if you're not doing headshots or weddings or whatever, may not be the right platform for you to put your time in. You're better off meeting people in person, you know, real social media, making phone calls, mailing postcards. And even then it may not happen. It's a long game and it's a hard game, and people don't want to hear that. People want to go on YouTube and be like, some dude's like, what's up? Here's five ways to up your game. Here's, you know, what are they using? They use all these terms. Here's five ways to hack your marketing. And, you know, and it's like,
writing that down. That's a good one. I'm going to use
right?
that.
Damn, what's the other one? They use all these terms.
Yeah, I'm always,
here's how you get torqued.
Whenever I see a headline or a book title or anything with the word secrets in it, I always turn it off. I'm like, come on. Secrets. If it was a secret, you wouldn't have put in a book. Right.
Right. You know, I have found that people that now more than ever value a true, honest connection. I used to use the word authentic, but that's been murdered thanks to social media marketing. We want something authentic. Okay, go pose over by that person's Lamborghini over there and act like it's yours. Make it authentic. You know, it's just like, people more than ever have value a real human connection. They want to and they value making art that matters now more than ever. And that is where I think it is important to truly do your smart marketing. I use printed portfolios again. I do handwritten note cards. They don't always work, but they're far more effective than sending out a ton of emails to a ton of randos and hope to God that someone looks at the copy that you wrote for 1,000 people and says, hey, that must mean it's for me.
Mm-hmm.
Meeting people in person, these are important things. As I mentioned many times on the show, I'm always out with one of my X-Pro2. So lately it's been both. I always carry an Instax printer in there. I photograph somebody on the spot. I make them a print on the spot. It's magic. I mean, it's freaking magic. I give them that in the business card. And now you have a real human connection. When I send out note cards, I send out with the larger square Instax that look a little like a smaller Polaroid. People love those. I actually get emails when I send note cards out and they say, thank you for the instant prints. They love them. That is a positive impact on someone's life when you send them a photo that is important to you, but it's also important to them, versus putting all this time and effort into liking or going on Instagram or whatever. And then hopefully if you're rocking it out, you get an emoji symbol, because that takes more effort than just, you know, double tapping the screen, hopefully. But then you're fighting the algorithms. And then are you doing the right ad buy, or should you do a sponsored post versus, you're much better doing it old school right now until social media, mainly Facebook, changes their business model, where you have more of an idea of what you're going to get and what you're not going to get. Right now, I think it's still too murky.
It's muddy. Yeah, it's muddy and murky. And you know what? I want to, one of our, the live stream viewers here, Good Dogs in the chat room, Good Dog just said, the romance of being a full-time photographer is spoiled by the reality of having to be a business person.
Yeah.
Right? It's true. That's the whole, Good Dog, that's the whole gist of this session here that we're talking about is understanding that line. Because, you know, you could be the person that's trapped in, you know, I say trapped, but, you know, I loved it when I was doing my corporate days for the most part. But you could not be in... You could be in corporate America. There's something, but you could be in corporate America dreaming about and you know, sitting like G and I were talking about this before I started streaming. You know, you got that spreadsheet out. You got that spreadsheet out. You're sitting in your computer and you're like, okay, there's 52 weeks in the year, so roughly 52 weekends. And if I multiply that by two weddings a weekend at this rate, I'm crushing it, right? I'm quitting my job tomorrow. That's, you know, okay, let me make it more complex. Let's take out benefits. Let's do all this other stuff, you know. But it's not that simple. Like Good Dog says, that's the romance. But the spoiled part is the marketing, the emails, the pounding the pavement, like G was just talking about, the phone calls, the not returned phone calls, the not returned emails, and building up the thick skin while also making sure you're still an amazing photographer, right? So that's the balance, right, G?
Yeah, and it gets worse too. It's like people will straight up lie to you, you know. Yeah. And strangely enough, I get that more since I moved to Texas than I have in any other place, straight up. At least, you know, not to diss on people in Texas, because I met way more good people than not. But when I'm in New York, if someone doesn't like you, you know it, like, right away. And, you know, at first, like, oh, that stings. But, you know, thank you, because now you know.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it's been really hard for me because I'm just so straight with people that they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to introduce you to such and such. And then you're like, you write an email. Oh, I've been busy. And I'm like, well, cool. That email intro takes what? A minute and a half. If you type slowly, then you write them again. You know what I mean? So you deal with that. The other thing is, I pass out these gorgeous printed portfolios. These are, sorry, I'll explain this too, but these are awesome. So this is what it looks like when I send it out.
Wow.
If you go on my website, this is one of the images. It's a shot I did in church.
Yeah. We talked about that last time.
Yep,
you were on. Yeah.
There's the back, but this is exactly how I send it out. And then I'm going to turn around so you don't see the person's name, but I put a handwritten note card in there, FAMU, and then inside there I put some Polaroids and whatnot. This is not open, because I don't think they even looked at it, and they held on to it for a few weeks.
Wait, now do they send the portfolio back to you, or do they get to keep it?
Yeah, no, they do. I sent this to them. I'm opening it now. And I'm going to hide their name, but this is exactly what it looks like. Hold on. That's my note card. I put a handwritten note.
Yeah.
This is one of the Instax prints. Okay. It says Hope. I have a, it, you know, it's from the series. It's on the cover. On the back, I have a different series of my Backsploitation, just because I thought it was cool, you know, to have something on the back. And I put a handwritten note. The focus on my portfolio is gentrification and mental health. When the book is ready for me to pick up, just hit me up. They've held on to it. And I always have three. You always keep one with you, and two to circulate. Some you mail, and you put a prepaid a thing in their label so they can send it back. So you don't want them to pay to have it shipped back. And then other ones you drop off locally, and you just put a note card in there, and they usually hit you up. But they held on to it for 2 weeks. Right before I went on vacation, I'm like, hey, is it ready? Is it ready? And then right before I left, like, yeah, we told you it was ready. I'm like, never got that email. So anyways, I go to pick it up. So they had it now for 3 weeks, and they never even opened it up to look at it. And you get that. And when you get that, it's like, you know, it sucks. But at the same time, you're pretty clear at that point that you're not going to be working with them, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And then you just move on to the next person.
How do you reconcile that though? So that's like literally analog old school, right? That's how they done it for, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of years. Mm-hmm. But how do you reconcile that with, hey, I could just do a targeted Facebook campaign towards this zip code and send them to a URL that has a video of me saying, hey, I'm Julio Shorio and here's some of my work. Click here to hire me and enter your credit card number if you want to, you know, leave a deposit to book me on this date or whatever. Like, how do you reconcile it doing it the old school, you know, foot or feet on the street method versus the tools that we have available today?
You know, that's a great question, and it depends on the type of photography you are doing. If you are a retail photographer, that means B2C, direct to consumer, portraits, weddings, that kind of thing, baby photos, then you should totally be doing some sort of paid marketing on socials, because that's where the consumers are. I'm going after ad agencies, going after direct to corporate marketing divisions. I'm looking for philanthropic work within companies. Those people are on socials, but they're not on socials as that necessarily as that entity. Mm-hmm. Maybe on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is an exception. So I find in the differences between what I do and what, say, often retail photographers do is retail photographers are more like they may do one or two shoots, unless they're really good with that person or that family. I'm looking to build long-term relationships, and to do that, I want to meet people face to face. I don't want people to. I don't get hired through an email and my website. I wish I could. Like, I thought about it. I looked at it hard. I'm like, I just don't know how I could do that and send out these big campaigns, because I really, realistically, I can only manage maybe 100 leads and grow those leads.
Yeah.
But to do that, like 1,000 or so, like, not a relationship that I want to grow long term. I mean, because the thing is, when someone hires a commercial photographer, or I consider myself an artist with a camera, but these people are putting their jobs on the line, and they want to know they're hiring somebody who's reliable, who can deliver something real, something that's going to help them sell their product or service and help them look good to their clients. And to do that, you have to have more of a personal relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's, you know, and I said that kind of tongue-in-cheek, the whole idea of using Facebook or media like that, because you're right, because what you're going for is a higher-end clientele and a higher-end local clientele that you can go and sit down with and flip through the pages of your book and tell them the intimate stories behind each shot versus, hey, I'm selling an ebook for, you know, $37 and it's all about volume at that point. Your quantity or quality over quantity.
Your scenario, by the way, is amazing. I'm like, flip through and actually talk about the book. That would be freaking awesome.
Dude,
usually what happens is you show up and they just kind of go flip, flip, flip. And like, all right. And if you even get that meeting, I had one face-to-face meeting this year.
Just one.
And I mean, I used to get my old portfolios back with like grease on them, like someone must have been like eating potato chips or pizza or something, like, you know. And when you get that, it's like it's I find it to be disrespectful. At the same time, like, I don't want to work with this person.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
just because somebody works filter. At an ad agency doesn't mean they're good at what they do.
Yeah,
you know. And I would say that a lot of those people would rather be doing it on their own than working at an agency. A lot of them, you know.
All right, Jay, there's a very important question that came into the chat from Low Bass or Low Bass Guy. He wants to know, is that Totoro photobombing you in the background?
No, we're getting on the cat bus after here, and we're gonna go take a spin.
Oh, is that what he is? Oh man, I love it. Yeah, I love that little stuffed animal.
Like that he is over 20 years old.
That Totoro is 20 years old? Wow.
I bought him a long time back when I got a bootleg Totoro in Japanese on VHS.
Yeah. Yeah. For those that don't know, that little stuffed animal object behind Julio is a Japanese character called Totoro. Americans will say Totoro, but it's called
Totoro.
Totoro.
That
yeah.
Totoro.
It's Totoro. Totoro. yeah. But yeah, check it out. If you're into Japanese animation, definitely check out Totoro. He's it's kind of a staple. All right. Cool. All right, G. It's time to roll that interview. Before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about the new program that you have coming out, the new coaching program. Speaking of teaching and vision and Zen type stuff, tell me about that. What's going on with that?
So I developed Finding the Photographer's Vision based on just years of exercises I've done for myself to keep my work fresh and to be able to understand who I am as an artist and to make work that has meaning and impact. Been doing it for years, and last year I rolled it out into a class that I launch a couple times a year, and I do coaching in the class one time a week with the students. The class is basically designed, you take the class, you will be a better photographer. You're not in the class to shoot, you're in the class to think. You shoot after the class. So people are like, oh, I gotta do assignments. You do the shooting assignments you can do afterwards. But you are basically diving in deep into who you are as an artist and finding that vision based on a variety of exercises coming out of the end of the class with a artist statement, basically your elevator pitch, and knowing, okay, cool, out of all the work I have, these are my five super awesome branding images. Now I got to go shoot this photo. I got to go shoot this photo. And that's going to make an awesome portfolio. And that's when the real work begins. It's a very powerful class, and there's nothing else like it. It will challenge you. I'm not going to tell you that it's an easy class, but the nice thing is once you are in the class, you're in it for life. You don't have to pay again, no matter how many times I update the videos, and I've updated them already several times. So and it's our small classes too. I like to keep them small so that there's a lot of one-on-one. But it's powerful. I mean, it's powerful. These are the tools that I use to predict where things are going. And I'm going to tell you straight up where it's going is vision, because the future of our economy is creative. And if you are, doesn't matter how technically proficient you are, if you want to be relevant as in any kind of artist, you have to have a unique ability to make it, in our case, photography that only you can make. And when you do that, you have no competition. Then it's just a matter of finding the right people. So if you want to grow it into a business based on the art, this is great. And if you just want to make a strong portfolio and feel good about the work you do, this is a class for you for sure.
All right. Yeah, very good. Well, good luck with that, man. I think you'll do well. I think you do well. You clearly have a passion for vision and photography, and you know, you put that peanut butter in that chocolate and you got something good. Right? So awesome. All right, folks, you know the deal. We're at the end of another episode of This Week in Photo. If you want to check out Julio's site and this new program he's putting together, what's the URL for that, G?
smallcamerabigpicture.com.
smallcamerabigpicture.com. Go check him out over there. And you know, it's time to take the lens cap off for this segment of the show, but we're going to continue. Both Julio, if you're available for another couple of minutes, we'll jump into the chat room while we're running this interview that I did with Jeff Cable. So if you're watching this and not watching it live or listening to the podcast, this is an incentive for you to come and listen and watch us live, because we get to hang out and interact with you guys after we finish with this live segment. So with that, I want to also thank our sponsor for this episode. That's our friends over at creativelive.com, creativelive.com. If you're interested in learning online for free live, you can head over to creativelive.com, check out their schedule, and watch their programs for free as they stream them live. Then if you decide, hey, you know what, I missed something, I want to go watch that again, then you can subscribe and purchase the courses. I believe they have a subscription program running now, so you can have access to their entire library for one low fee. Go check them out at creativelive.com. All right, folks. And with that, for this segment at least, it is time to take that lens cap off.
This is Twit.